Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Governing the Commons by Eleanor Ostrom is a foundational work in political economy that challenges the assumption that shared resources must inevitably be ruined by overuse unless they are privatized or tightly regulated by the state. Drawing on widely discussed real-world cases of forests, fisheries, irrigation systems, and grazing lands, Ostrom explores how communities have successfully created durable rules to manage common pool resources over long periods. The book is known for replacing one-size-fits-all solutions with careful attention to local context, incentives, and institutional design. Instead of treating people as helpless prisoners of self-interest, it examines how cooperation can emerge when users can communicate, monitor one another, and adapt rules over time. As part of the Canto Classics line, this edition highlights the book's enduring relevance for debates on sustainability, climate adaptation, community governance, and policy design in complex social ecological systems. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, rethinking the tragedy narrative of shared resources. A central contribution of Governing the Commons is its critique of the simple story that common resources are doomed to collapse. The book distinguishes between an open access situation, where no one has enforceable rights or duties, and a true commons, where a defined group of users has rules and expectations. That difference matters, because many famous arguments about inevitable overuse treat the resource as if anyone can take as much as they want at any time. Ostrom argues that the relevant problem is not common ownership itself, but weak or mismatched institutions. She analyzes why policy debates often jump from the diagnosis of overharvesting to only two prescriptions, privatization or centralized government control. Both approaches can fail when they ignore local knowledge, impose high monitoring costs, or undermine legitimacy. By reframing the issue around collective action and institutional diversity, the book opens space for a third option, self-governed arrangements created and maintained by resource users. This reframing also changes what analysts should measure, focusing on rules in use, enforcement, conflict resolution, and the fit between ecological dynamics and social arrangements. Secondly, common pool resources and the logic of collective action, Ostrom clarifies why common pool resources are challenging by separating two features, difficulty of exclusion and subtractibility. When it is costly to keep people out and one person's use reduces what remains for others, users face strong temptations to free ride or overuse. The book places these dilemmas within a broader collective action framework that asks how groups solve problems of commitment, information, and enforcement. Rather than assuming fixed preferences and inevitable defection, Ostrom examines conditions under which cooperation becomes rational and stable. Key factors include repeated interaction, shared understanding of the resource, the ability to communicate, and credible mechanisms for sanctioning rule breakers. She also emphasizes the importance of boundaries, both of the resource and of the user group, because ambiguous membership makes accountability difficult. The analysis highlights how rules can allocate extraction rights, define responsibilities, and structure monitoring. Importantly, the book treats institutions as evolving systems rather than static blueprints. Groups learn from failures, adjust to shocks, and refine rules to reduce uncertainty. This approach helps explain why similar resources can show very different outcomes across locations and why policy tools must be evaluated as part of an incentive system, not as isolated interventions. Thirdly, design principles for long-lasting self-governance. One of the book's most influential elements is its synthesis of recurring design principles found in successful, long-enduring commons institutions. These principles describe patterns rather than rigid formulas, but they provide a practical lens for diagnosing whether an arrangement is likely to hold. They include clearly defined boundaries so users know who has rights and duties, and rules that match local conditions, such as seasonal variability or differences in resource regeneration. Collective choice matters because users who can participate in modifying rules are more likely to view them as legitimate and worth following. Monitoring is treated as essential, especially when monitors are accountable to users and understand the resource on the ground. Graduated sanctions help maintain compliance without triggering excessive conflict, while low-cost conflict resolution mechanisms keep disputes from escalating into breakdown. Another principle is minimal recognition of the right to organize, meaning external authorities do not constantly override local rules. For larger systems, nested enterprises allow governance at multiple levels, aligning local monitoring with broader coordination. Together, these principles shift attention from idealized market or state models to the concrete institutional features that sustain cooperation under real-world constraints. Fourthly, case-based evidence and comparative institutional analysis, Ostrom's argument is anchored in comparative case analysis that examines how different communities manage resources such as irrigation systems, forests, fisheries, and grazing areas. Rather than presenting a single success story, the book highlights variation. Some systems persist for centuries, others degrade quickly, and many fall somewhere in between. This comparative approach emphasizes that outcomes depend on how rules, norms, and enforcement interact with ecological and economic conditions. For example, irrigation systems require coordination across head-end and tail-end users, creating distributional conflicts that institutions must address. Forest and fishery systems often involve mobile or diffuse resources, raising the costs of monitoring and making boundary definition more complex. By comparing settings, Ostrom illustrates how institutional arrangements are tailored to resource characteristics, technology, and social structure. The analysis also shows how external interventions can help or harm depending on whether they reinforce local accountability or replace it with distant control. The method encourages readers to evaluate governance options using criteria such as information costs, monitoring feasibility, legitimacy, and adaptability. This evidence-driven stance makes the book a model for policy analysis that respects complexity while still searching for generalizable insights. Lastly, implications for policy, sustainability, and multi-level governance, the book's lessons extend beyond small rural communities to modern policy challenges that involve shared systems and overlapping jurisdictions. Ostrom cautions against panaceas, emphasizing that effective governance depends on fit between institutions and the resource system. This has major implications for environmental regulation, development projects, and climate-related adaptation efforts. Instead of assuming that central authorities can design optimal rules for every location, the book points to polycentric governance, where multiple centers of decision-making coordinate, compete, and learn. Such arrangements can be more resilient because they allow experimentation, feedback, and adaptation at different scales. The work also informs how governments and donors should engage with community management. Support may be most effective when it recognizes local rulemaking authority, helps resolve conflicts, and provides legal frameworks that enable enforcement. At the same time, Ostrom does not romanticize communities, acknowledging that power imbalances, inequality, and changing incentives can undermine cooperation. The policy takeaway is a balanced approach that blends local knowledge with broader coordination, using institutional diagnostics to decide when self-governance is likely to succeed, when it needs reinforcement, and when other governance forms are necessary. In conclusion, this book is best suited for readers who want a serious, evidence-based understanding of how people organize to manage shared resources, including students and researchers in political science, economics, public policy, environmental studies, and sociology, as well as practitioners in conservation, development, and local government. It can benefit a reader's life by sharpening how they think about cooperation problems in everyday settings, from neighborhood associations to workplace coordination. Compared to similar books that frame the commons mainly as a warning story, Governing the Commons is worth buying because it offers a constructive alternative grounded in comparative analysis and a clear set of institutional patterns that can be used diagnostically. Its enduring value is the way it helps readers ask better questions. Who are the users? What are the boundaries? How are rules made and enforced? And how do institutions adapt when conditions change? By insisting on institutional diversity and rejecting one-size-fits-all fixes, it remains a practical guide for designing policies and community arrangements that are both sustainable and politically feasible. If you would like to support Eleanor Ostrom, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.